Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, Darvin Ham wants to maximize Anthony Davis defensively. What does that look like and what does it do for the team? That's next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, sometimes on weekends. But no matter how you get your podcasts or where you get your podcasts, Andy, it's never, this one's never going to be behind a paywall. We're never going to charge you, listener, a dime to get this thing, whether or you can get it on YouTube, Locked On Lakers on YouTube. That's where you go to see the podcast and often get access to it before the audio product is live. So that's another advantage of subscribing there and getting your alerts and all that. Want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. So DeMar DeRozan has been talking again about thinking he was going to be a Laker. Like, it's just not like people don't want to hear you talking about that, DeMar DeRozan, because the Laker that ended up here didn't turn out well. Please stop torturing Lakers fans, but we'll talk about that in a minute. LeBron James is adding to his growing portfolio of professional sports franchises that he owns. We'll try to get to that before the end of the show, but let's start here, Andy. Anthony Davis was talking a little bit on, well, this was in Wednesday's practice, right? How Darvin Ham is deploying a new system and kind of, you know, obviously new terminology and all that. But he's really trying to take advantage of Anthony Davis. The biggest thing that he's got him doing right now, he's playing center field.
Yeah. The way AD described it during that practice was, quote, "It's more of a Milwaukee system where they have the bigs back in the paint. For me, I'm more up on the ball. Let me affect the play." So that's the biggest difference for me. It's something I'm trying to transition to, not helping as much, letting the guys on the ball do their thing, staying out of the play when it's not my assignment. Darvin then noted that, you know, there is going to be what they call the red, which is their terminology for a switching package. But he just talking about this and AD's ability to just protect the paint. He said, I mean, just look at his ability to get back. He can do that, protect the rim. He can also get up and move his feet. We'll definitely have a package in our pick and roll defense where it requires us to red, you know, switch. And we're more than comfortable with switching him on to smaller players. So they're not looking to completely, you know, take away that diversity.
Turn him into just a drop coverage center against
right.
the pick and roll.
He's not going to become Brook Lopez, you know, just thinking about comps for what Darvin had defensively in Milwaukee. But at the same time, though, what it does not seem they're looking to do is having Anthony Davis be a full-time Swiss Army knife. You know what I mean? Like where he's sort of that do-it-all guy defensively all game. Like they're going to be picking and choosing some of the spots where you see him acting as much defensively as a guard as he would a big man.
It's – I mean, the defensive concepts are complicated for the people who have to go out and execute them. You know, guys who live in the NBA and have to go out and do these things. And there are enormous subtleties to what they're, what these schemes get into and all of that. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I am a, you know, an expert in breaking down defensive film. What I just think is always hard with somebody like Davis. You talk about that sort of Swiss Army knife capability is, you know, there are certain things he's better at than others. If you break down the statistical stuff, I saw Krangis, our friend Tim at _NBA, talking about Anthony Davis's defense via spectrum against drop coverage versus other things, not as good there versus out on the perimeter, all that stuff. He's still pretty good at all of it, and he can be dominant at times. You don't want to put yourself in a position where you have to make him do everything. And so I think one of the things that will be interesting to watch is why. Like, because I do think it is a real challenge to be constantly recovering, you know, helping, you know, closing out, all these other things on the perimeter and doing like the really amazing stuff that AD can do. But it is very taxing and it is very difficult for a guy, especially who's doing a lot of work on the other end and a guy who really, really needs to be on the floor. And so there's the question to me of how do you maximize Anthony Davis and his defensive ability in literally the most effective way to maximize the Lakers defense? But how do you also do it in a way that balances to get the maximum out of AD? Because you can't get that maximum defense if he's not there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the number one thing with everything AD, no matter what offensive or defensive scheme the Lakers are going to be implementing this season. If he's not out there on a regular basis as a healthy version of himself, I mean, this is all, you know, cocktail party conversation. Like none of it actually matters. You know what I mean?
Have you ever been to a cocktail party where you discussed the merits of Anthony Davis and drop coverage versus, say, you know, a more aggressive switching pick and roll defense?
I mean, I would say I've
what
been
kind of
to
parties are you attending?
I would say that if you consider beers to be cocktails and beers being served at said parties, and some of the people that I know enjoy talking about basketball, and Brian, you will attest to this, because of the profession that we're in, anywhere we go, people just on demand want us to talk sports.
You met a guy at the guy was getting I was filling up my gas tank today, California. I got a refinery problem, by the way. Gas has shot up about $1 a gallon in the last 4 days, I think. But anyway,
thanks, Biden.
Got myself one of these big thirsties at the gas station and met a man in the in there who said, "You're a Kemen," I think he called me a Kemenity brother, but I knew who he meant. And so that happened to me this very afternoon, Andy, where we were out and meeting the people.
Right.
He invited me to a cocktail party.
Right. But the point being, though, I have been to, I think, what could be broadly considered a cocktail party where people have asked me to talk about sports, not necessarily.
I was just thinking of that level of detail. That's all. Here's the other thing about it, though. It's like,
screw you for not believing me, man.
Broadly speaking, would you agree with this? The Lakers are, from a personnel standpoint, I'm still not convinced they're going to be good defensively, but I do think they are better set up to be good this year versus last year. I think if you take a look at the personnel, and Damian Jones is clearly better defensively, you know, potentially defensively than anybody they had last year at the center position. Thomas Bryant's not going to be worse. And, you know, you look at it, adding Troy Brown, who at least has a little bit of a reputation on that side of the ball. Nunn should help them. Schroeder can help them. Beverly will definitely help them.
Juan Toscano-Anderson will help.
Yep. They should be better. Would you agree?
Like, you know, as long as every single game, the opposing team's best offensive wing is either hurt or getting load management. Well, I mean, look, all joking aside, yes, I do think they are better equipped. It's just there's that obvious hole in their defensive integrity, or at the very least, the push-pull about what do you do with somebody like JTA or Troy Brown, who
have a much more defensive
profile, but you wonder what are we giving up offensively with those guys out there? Or, you know, how much wing defense does LeBron play? Does Austin Reeves, who noted he's now up to 210 pounds, which means he put on 13 pounds, Brian, of off-season muscle, so that falls neatly into
Austin Reeves. That's it right there.
Falls neatly into the 10 to 15 pounds of offseason muscle that we love to hear about guys putting on. Also, too, it gets into the question of AD and how often he would be used on, you know, an opponent's best wing scorer, because we've seen in the
past. And Pat Beverly. Let's talk about that after the break, because I have an Anthony Davis question that I thought of kind of on my way home today, before we were recording, that I just want to kind of throw at you and see what you think. But like this question of individual game defense versus like what is sustainable over the course of the year, particularly when you talk about how the Lakers are going to guard wings, is one of the bigger question marks I think the Lakers have. So let's do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by BetOnline, BetOnline.net, your number one source for all your pro and college football betting needs and sports info this season. Find all the latest football, league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores, the fastest, easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf, but also, of course, this is the podcast you're tuning in for, NBA. You want to get ahead of the 2023 season, lay down some early action. The Lakers getting 22-1 odds right now to win the championship. If you think they are not getting enough respect right now, or if nothing else, you know, just not even getting consideration as a surprise team, get your bet in now, because 22-1 is a really
trust
nice
me,
payout.
BetOnline wants you to put that money in as fast as you possibly can.
Yes, they do. Also, Darvin Ham getting 18-1 odds for Coach of the Year. So head to the website today. Use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
The Lakers, I think, Andy, game to game, are capable of finding players who can guard wings. I mean, LeBron, when he is fully engaged and, you know, energized and whatever, has the ability to still defend. He can do it. You know, Anthony Davis is perfectly comfortable switching on to longer, you know, to wings, and can cause major trouble for those guys and all of that. And, you know, you have a couple other guys, you know, they've talked about Pat Beverly as guarding up, so to speak. And, you know, Beverly himself has expressed no qualms about, you know, guarding people as large as Kevin Durant and all of these things. None of these are great ideas from a sustainability standpoint. We spent a lot of time in the first segment noting that you need to construct a defense that is both maximizes Anthony Davis's ability to create a real defensive kind of core for the Lakers. And, you know, you build that around AD because he is a transformational defensive player. You also need one that maximizes his ability to stay on the floor. And those two schemes may not be exactly the same thing. You need to keep LeBron on the floor. Having him defend the other team's best wing defender all night is not the best way to do it. Pat Beverly is 6'1", and misses 35 games a year. So that question of what can the Lakers do game to game versus what they can do sustainably over the course of a season that you kind of alluded to in the first segment, I think is that's a really hard challenge for Darvin, because it impacts the rotation. It impacts, you know, how you can, which guys you can use and when, and it impacts the number of games you can probably win over the course of a season.
Well, I mean, like I said before, to some degree, again, that question of what Troy Brown Jr. and Juan Toscano-Anderson can bring either offensively in terms of the actual points they generate themselves or things that they do to help keep the offense running. Like, for example, Juan Toscano-Anderson is a very good ball mover. And if he can serve as, you know, in certain respects, kind of what they were looking for, I would say, from Trevor Ariza last season, you know, I mean, not even like best case scenario from Trevor, but just somebody who can kind of fit into what you're doing offensively without getting in the way and hopefully contribute. I think that had been some of the hope for him until the health issues surfaced and just became obvious physically the guy was cooked, or even like a very poor man's version of Draymond Green. You know what I mean? And I think it
is very...
But it could be instructive that JTA spent a few years seeing what Draymond does up close. And I know JTA thinks of himself as a glue guy, not just in the locker room, but on the court.
And he's got a bit of a front court version of, you know, Austin Reeves. They have similar qualities in that
regard. Exactly. Or, you know, for that matter, somebody like Austin Reeves, like, A, how much can he actually guard up? But, you know, how much will he be able to contribute offensively? Is the three-point shooting going to improve? Because he is thought of as much more of a three-point shooter than he actually is, you know, white guys. But it's also, too, I think, in terms of the taxing nature of this on AD and that balance of kind of unleashing AD versus thinking the full season picture, it's important to remember some of what he would be asked to do is going to be dictated by the position that he's playing. Mm-hmm. And the Lakers brought in two centers.
Who's playing next to him? All those combinations.
Thomas Bryant, Damian Jones. Those guys were brought in to play. You know what I mean? Like you've talked about this a lot, and I think you're right. The Lakers really upgraded their center position this year, whether by design or because that's where they could get the best bang for their buck going after veteran minimum guys.
Well, also too, like, especially compared to last year, literally by picking two different centers, they were almost automatically going to upgrade because, sure. I mean, I especially when you look back on it, and I think people had a little bit higher hopes for Dwight, although the warning signs were there in Philly. I mean, they were there and we pointed them out before the season started. It's still, you know, he wasn't very effective and he was still way better than DeAndre Jordan. The Lakers had, I mean, a comically unplayable pair of centers last year. Like it would have been almost impossible for them to pick two guys that were worse.
But they also might not have.
They upgraded in a significant way, not just by getting two different centers, but actually upgraded into guys who are not all-stars, but are very playable rotation caliber guys, especially if used, you know, kind of, you know, in the most effective way. So I really like with it. It's one of the reasons I'm annoyed at the idea that they might try to play all 16 of their guards, because definitionally it means less time for a positional strength like center, where I think they could get a lot out of Thomas Bryant if he's fully recovered, where I think they can get a lot out of Damian Jones, who shot 95% his first stint with the Lakers.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, those guys bring very, very different skill sets offensively. You know, Damian Jones is obviously a pure rim threat, you know, a rim running threat, a lob threat, but he can be extremely effective in that role. Thomas Bryant, the hope is that he can regain that form pre-injury where he didn't necessarily shoot threes at a volume, but he shot them at a pretty good clip. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at some of their numbers defensively, like Damian Jones is much more of a pure shot blocker than Thomas Bryant. But some of Thomas Bryant's numbers, either around the lane defensively or just like from 6 feet or in, like the overall team effect, they're not bad.
No, he's not just a three-point shooter. He's a pretty good, well-rounded offensive center.
And he is, you know, it's funny. We saw him as a rookie, and I remember I said to you during media day, it was interesting to me just to hear Thomas Bryant now talk in his mid-20s versus the one season when he was with the Lakers, not because I necessarily remember conversations with Thomas Bryant or anything like that. It's just interesting to hear him sound so much more like an adult than he did as kind of like a kid, rightly, when he's with the Lakers. Like, he sounds like a very mature player now, talking mm-hmm. about basketball, talking about his approach to the game, all that stuff. And, you know, they're different players. Like, looking up some of their numbers, like, as you would expect, you know, Damian Jones is considerably better defending, like, or the overall effect in transition, because he's way more athletic than Thomas Jones. You would expect he'd be able to get back better. You know, he's in certain respects better at covering, I think, a wider variety of spots on the floor defensively, but he's way worse in terms of percentiles defending a role man in pick and roll defense than Thomas Bryant. Neither one of them is a good rebounder, and that might be a generous way of putting it. I'd say they're both pretty lacking on the boards, on, you know, particularly the defensive glass for their position. But they are, as you said, playable centers, and they have strengths on both sides of the ball, and their ability to be out there is going to dictate in certain respects some of what you ask for Anthony Davis, just in terms of, I think, what he would do positionally defensively, like, you know, as a four versus as a five, but also too, how much ground he would actually have to cover and how much, you know, running from 20 feet back to the basket he would need to do because nobody else is doing a damn thing. Mm-hmm. Like, those two out there just by themselves may, over the course of a year, I think, reduce some of that wear and tear.
I just hope they find ways to get Thomas Bryant might not rebound and get back to that pre-injury form. I don't know. And, you know, Damian Jones
rebound literally or figuratively.
Figuratively. I don't want it to talk about Damian Jones like he's this hidden all-star, whatever. He's not, but
we're not Anthony Irwin.
We're not Anthony Irwin. But he has turned himself into a useful offensive, a useful NBA rotation center. You know, 20-minute night guy. You know, deployed properly and all that kind of stuff. Plus, Vandy, so which I respect. So there's potential there. So I want to ask you this question about Anthony Davis. I want to get to the DeMar stuff if we can, but this is something that occurred to me about Anthony Davis, and I'll give you time over the break to think about it. Seth Curry on media day, when he was asked about Ben Simmons, said, you know, especially given all of the waves arms about around with Ben Simmons, he's like, he's underrated at this point. And I happen to agree. I think Ben Simmons has been so universally trashed over the last year that, assuming he actually is healthy and engaged, we have forgotten as a sort of collective basketball public just how good a player he is and what a difference maker he can be on that particular team, where they don't really need a third scorer. They need a guy who can defend and do all that stuff. Like, he in theory is a perfect fit for what they want to do there in Brooklyn. I sometimes feel the same about Rudy Gobert, that he gets ragged on to the point where we are losing a little bit of perspective on just how good he is.
Absolutely.
It's not apples to apples. I get that. Is Anthony Davis underrated? Is he overrated? How do you think people think right now of AD, kind of along those lines? Because he's received a ton of criticism. And a lot of it, but I was just thinking about this today, and I wanted to put that question to you. So we'll do that next. I don't think underrated is the right word for AD, but something sort of feels off. Like, I heard Seth Curry say that about Simmons, and it immediately got me thinking about Davis. Like, where is he? Like, what is the proper rating at this point? Or, you know, thinking of Davis in terms of how good he is and what caliber he is, because the swings really are big. He is capable of being one of the five best players in the NBA, but for most of his career, he hasn't quite played that way. So I don't, where would you kind of place him in that way? You know, it's a hard question, at least to me.
No, I actually don't think it's a hard question. I think he's actually very properly rated. He's somebody that collectively we think has a ton of talent, but because of availability issues and to some degree mentality and approach issues, he is not the player that you think he could be at his absolute peak more often, even though the baseline for AD is still pretty damn good. So
thinks he sucks. That's right, not my point.
I'm just saying, I actually think he's pretty properly rated.
But he's at somebody this point, that, should we? So the follow up to that would be, at this point, should we stop thinking about him as this sort of potential top five guy? Like, and understand the norm and the baseline for Anthony Davis is top 15, which is still really good, but it's not.
I think it depends on how you're defining this. I mean, to whatever degree you think it matters in terms of how you're defining this at all in the first place, but I think he is somebody who has top five talent, but for a variety of reasons, it doesn't manifest itself on a regular basis, which I think is basically the way he's thought about. And I think it's basically accurate. There's this vacuum of absence with skill set in certain respects with Ben Simmons that I think can make it so polarizing. I don't think AD is so much polarizing it as he is frustrating. I think whatever discrepancy there is in agreement with people with where he is, it's more out of frustration than can't figure out what he is. Mm-hmm. Like Rudy Gobert, the debate with him is just, you know, how much does he get played off the floor?
He's obviously very good at what he does. Is what he does worth what Minnesota gave up,
right?
Is what he does and valuable that's whole, in today's NBA,
right? And that's a whole other thing.
No, that you summarized it really well. It's not a basketball philosophy question when it comes to Anthony Davis. It is a frustration and performance level. Whereas with those other guys, there's also performance in the playoffs, but a lot of it revolves around larger basketball conversations. So that's a really good way of putting it. It's just something I was thinking of, literally thinking kind of out loud on the show. But I thought it was interesting. DeMar DeRozan, was it with J.J. Redick?
Yep.
This time? Trolling Lakers fans?
He's getting some great guests, J.J. Redick.
ESPN gave him a lot of money for a good reason.
He's good at this stuff.
I agree with you. So he keeps noting that he thought he was going to be a Laker.
DeMar DeRozan did.
And it's very frustrating, I think, to Lakers fans, because certainly in hindsight, Lakers fans wish that's how it had turned out. The one thing that's missing, Andy, every time he does this, and he keeps doing it, and I love DeMar DeRozan, I wish he had come here, is how. Like, we still haven't gotten a good explanation as to how he was going to be a Laker.
That's something I pointed out on Twitter, at Cam Brothers. Like, for all this has been brought up and bandied about by DeRozan, and this is something that he, for whatever reason, wants to keep alive, because, you know, I know Redick asked him about it, but, you know, he could easily just be like, dude, I've answered this question. Yeah, I thought I was going to be a Laker. It's been a year now. It's not really that big of a deal. You know, it's not something I think about. Like, it's something that he has seemed interested in keeping alive, to the point where if I were one of his Bulls teammates, I'd be like, dude, we get it. You wanted to go to LA. Like, you want to drop this? You know, we got some serious issues on this team. Lonzo Ball may not be available for half, if not all, the season. Like, can we knock off the whole you wanted to be a Laker thing? But, like, the actual how this would have happened has not even been, whether you're talking about the parameters of some type of sign and trade deal, because the Lakers did not have the money to sign him outright, or the money that would have been involved, like, even broadly, has never been clarified at all. And, like, DeRozan as a sign and trade deal would have been way more complicated to pull off than getting Russ, regardless of how you feel about the Lakers getting Russ.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the longer he's gone without sharing any details about how this was going to happen, just he thought it was going to, the less I suspect this was really a thing, or that DeMar DeRozan,
like, I mean, because, like, this whole notion that he was going to sign here for the mid level or something, the mini mid level. I've never believed that, you know, at all. I mean, he got a really big contract, and deservedly so. Nobody gives up that kind of money.
Well, I mean, he earned that money last year at a career best year, but you may recall when Chicago gave him that money, people thought they were insane. People thought that was a massive over.
Right, but there's a big gap between, geez, that's a lot for DeMar DeRozan, and he's going to play for the mini mid-level.
No, but I'm not saying he should have. I'm saying people thought that 3-85 was a lot for DeMar DeRozan. Like, it's not like people thought Chicago got him at a steal last year.
Oh, no. I understand what you mean there. But, like, even if, like, you think, like, the right number was $68 million, you know, for DeMar, there's a big difference. Again,
and the Lakers couldn't have done that anyway.
12. But the Lakers could have given him, like, 13. That's it.
Right.
Or, you know, 15. Or
what,
you know,
sign and trade, you know, people keep... I've seen a lot of people framing this as if the Lakers just needed to offer San Antonio the exact same offer that they offered the Wizards for Russ, just, you know, KCP, Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, probably a pick, you know, and whatever, and just plug in the same outgoing players and goodies, and they get DeMar, no questions asked. It's like, no, what San Antonio wants is not going to automatically mm-hmm. be the same as what the Wizards wanted. And you have to at least acknowledge that it's not the same thing.
It was an enormously complicated setup. And
yeah, because taking in a sign and trade for the Lakers would have triggered a hard cap. It would have been just more complicated. I'm not saying they couldn't have done it, but it would have been very, very complicated. And again, the more this has gone on, that DeRozan does not share at least some framework of what he thought was going to happen, the more I think, you know, and this is a weird thing to say about somebody that clearly would know more about this than me, but the more I think he's actually mistaken about how close this was.
Or, like, what it means, like, what close meant. Like, I think maybe he was close, like, to the, hey, this could happen, are you on board part of
well,
it?
Well, no, he said.
As opposed to.
He said on this podcast, quote, I thought it was a done deal. I took a trip to Mexico just to get away because I could just feel the anticipation of everything. So I was like, I'm going away for a couple of days, take my mind off it. By the time I get home, it'll be free agency, sign with the Lakers. I'm asleep one morning in Mexico. I get a call from Kyle Lowry. And he said, they just made the deal for Russ. What's going on? I thought the deal was for you to go to the Lakers. And I'm like confused. I'm looking at my phone like, damn, that did happen. So I guess that's out the window. So in his mind, if nothing else, like he said, he was behind the eight ball, like in that offseason, because he's like, where the hell am I going to go? I thought I was going to the Lakers. So he clearly thought he was going. I just wonder if
I wonder if he's mistaken. I need to know what San Antonio was willing to take or what deal would have been constructed out there. I wish, because look, I mean, if that comes out, if we ever get some kind of like real illustration of like what was available, I happen to agree with you. I think we would have seen that information. Like, this is what they passed up. That would create all kinds of potential controversy for general manager Rob Pelinka, depending on the terms of that. Anyway, so, all right, weekend's coming up. Lakers will be back on the floor. They did not practice on Thursday, but they'll be back on the floor getting ready for next week's first preseason games, Andy. They're already playing basketball. It's very exciting.
Can't come soon enough.
Yeah, seriously. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the podcast. Everybody have a great weekend.